Usually when we talk about medicine, there's this this expectation of just absolute precision. Like you break your arm, the x-ray shows that jagged white line, and the doctor just points at it.
Right. There's the problem. It is entirely binary. I mean, the bone is broken or it isn't. And I think we find a lot of comfort in that kind of diagnostic clarity.
We really do. But then you step behind the curtain, into how a modern hospital actually operates under the hood. You look at the software, the data flow, the scheduling networks, and suddenly all that precision just vanishes.
It completely evaporates, yeah.
Right. We are looking at a technological landscape that is, frankly, incredibly murky.
Right.
And this directly impacts every single person listening to this deep dive right now. Because whether you are a patient waiting, 3 agonizing weeks for a lab result, or you're a healthcare worker just drowning in administrative paperwork, this invisible digital infrastructure is what dictates the care you experience.
Which brings us to this massive, almost paradoxical disconnect that's happening in the industry right now. Because according to the comprehensive Scopic guide we are unpacking today, health system executives all over the world recognize that digital and AI transformation is absolutely essential to their survival.
Right, it's not a secret.
Exactly, they know this. Yet a staggering 75% of them report that their digital investments are falling short.
Which, I mean, that statistic absolutely floored me when I read it. 75%.
It's massive.
That is a catastrophic failure rate for something that is universally deemed a necessity.
Yeah.
Like, how do 3/4 of these massive, incredibly well-funded organizations fail at just upgrading their technology?
Well, it's because it is rarely the technology's fault. I mean, the software usually works fine. The algorithms do exactly what they are programmed to do. The failure almost always comes down to implementation.
Ah, okay.
Success in healthcare technology requires a highly, highly specific strategy. You can't just, buy expensive software and expect it to automatically fix systemic problems.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the phrase digital transformation is thrown around so much, it often sounds like, I don't know, meaningless corporate jargon.
It really does. It becomes a buzzword.
Exactly. But the source material gives it a very concrete definition. In healthcare, it's the strategic use of tech, so things like electronic health records, cloud platforms, telemedicine, and the Internet of Medical Things, to fundamentally redesign how care is delivered.
And that word redesign is the entire crux of the issue here. The Scopic Guide outlines 5 main pillars of this kind of transformation. You have customer experience, operations, business models.
Wait, so operations and business models, okay.
Yeah, and then the last two are organizational culture and finally technology.
Which is wild because notice that technology is only one of the 5 pillars.
Exactly the point. The other 4 are entirely about human behavior and structural workflows.
That clarifies so much because if I'm a hospital administrator and I buy, say, 500 shiny new iPads for my nursing staff, I haven't actually achieved digital transformation, have I?
No, not at all.
Right. Because if those nurses are using a brand new $1,000 piece of glass just to tack through the exact same repetitive, totally inefficient forms they used to fill out on a paper clipboard, nothing has transformed.
Except.
The nurse is still frustrated, the patient is still waiting, and all I've done is I've basically put a digital band-aid on a broken analog workflow.
You've perfectly highlighted the trap that most hospitals fall into. I mean, you haven't changed the workflow, you've just digitized the inefficiency.
Right.
True transformation requires tearing down that original process. And when organizations actually manage to redesign the underlying system, the benefits detailed in the text are just profound.
Right, it has to be worth all that effort.
Oh, absolutely. It goes far, far beyond just giving doctors faster access to a patient's medical history.
So how does that actually look in practice? Like, what does a redesigned system do for you, the patient?
Well, it allows the technology to actively participate in the care. So we see AI-powered analytics that are capable of detecting potential health issues before they become critical.
Wow.
Yeah, by cross-referencing your data against thousands of similar patients. And we also see the total automation of those mind-numbing administrative tasks. So billing, scheduling, onboarding.
Which I imagine removes a massive amount of human error. I mean, if a tired administrator isn't manually typing in complex billing codes at hour 11 of a double shift, fewer mistakes get made.
Exactly. And fewer delays in patient care occur as a result. But on a macro level, aggregating all this data allows healthcare providers to shift their entire philosophy.
How so?
They move from simply reacting to individual sick people walking through their doors to actively managing the health of entire populations. They can spot broader trends, predict resource shortages, and intervene way earlier.
So the upside is basically a total revolution in medical care. But we are still staring down that 75% failure rate. So if a hospital actually wants to be in the successful 25%, how do they begin? Because I imagine you can't just, you know, plug an AI into a hospital's mainframe and press go.
You certainly cannot. The source outlines a very pragmatic blueprint, an 8-step roadmap, and it starts entirely with evaluation and modernization.
Which means looking at what you already have.
Right. You have to take a hard, often uncomfortable look at your existing environment. Most hospitals are operating on incredibly messy legacy systems.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, you might have a radiology department using software from, say, 2015, while the pharmacy is using a completely different system from 2010. Those systems act as data silos. They just don't share information.
So the very first step is just forcing them to talk to each other.
Yes. Before you even think about implementing predictive AI, you have to modernize that foundation. You migrate the data to secure cloud environments, and you utilize APIs to connect all those disparate applications.
Okay, let me stop you there, because API is another one of those terms that gets tossed around constantly. For someone listening who isn't steeped in software engineering, what is an API actually doing in this specific context?
Sure. Think of an API, which stands for Application Programming Interface, as a waiter in a restaurant.
Okay, a waiter.
Right. You are sitting at the table with the menu. That's one software system. The kitchen is a completely different software system. You don't speak the kitchen's language. And frankly, you aren't allowed back there anyway.
Right. Health and safety.
Exactly. So the API is the waiter. It takes your specific order, carries it to the kitchen, translates it so the chefs understand, and then brings your food back to the table.
Oh, that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. So in a hospital, an API takes a request from the primary care doctor system, fetches the necessary X-ray from the radiology system, and delivers it securely back to the doctor's screen.
I love that analogy. So once we have our waiters running smoothly and the servers aren't constantly crashing, how does the hospital actually measure if this massive investment is working? Because I assume they don't just guess.
Well, unfortunately, they often do, which leads directly to that high failure rate. Management teams frequently fall into the trap of setting just incredibly vague goals.
Like saying, we want to improve patient outcomes, or we want a more efficient workflow.
Yes. And those are completely useless metrics. The guide explicitly warns against this. If you can't measure a baseline, you cannot manage its improvement. Success requires highly granular key performance indicators, or KPIs.
Give me an example of a good KPI versus a bad one from the text.
Okay. A bad goal is improve patient satisfaction. A good actionable KPI is reduce patient wait times in the emergency department by exactly 20% within 6 months.
Right, something you can actually put on a chart.
Exactly. Another good one would be tracking the exact adoption rate of a new telehealth portal, or measuring whether hospital readmission rates for heart failure patients drop by a specific percentage after you implement automated follow-up texts.
Okay, but that brings up a massive point of friction for me. Let's say the hospital does all that. They set those great KPIs, they fix the servers, they roll out this brilliant new AI tool. We still have to deal with the actual human beings using it.
Always the hardest part.
Right. And I've always wondered about this. Why is there so much staff resistance? These are highly educated doctors and nurses. If a tool makes their job easier, why would they fight it?
Because of the cognitive load required to learn it. I mean, think about a trauma surgeon or an ER nurse. They are operating in a high-stakes, life-or-death environment. They have built muscle memory around their current workflows, even if those workflows are incredibly inefficient.
Ah, so when you drop a massive new software update on them, you aren't just giving them a new tool, you are disrupting their rhythm.
You're disrupting their rhythm while they are literally trying to save lives. If the new interface requires, say, 40 clicks instead of 10, or if they just weren't given adequate time to train on it, they will actively reject it. They will find workarounds to go back to the old way.
Which completely defeats the purpose.
Right. And the guide places a really heavy emphasis on change management for this exact reason. You have to involve the clinical staff early in the design process, long before a single line of code is written, so the technology conforms to their needs, not the other way around.
So securing leadership buy-in and running continuous staff training that isn't just HR fluff, it's the actual glue holding the whole technology project together.
It is arguably more important than the software itself. The most sophisticated AI diagnostic tool in the world provides zero return on investment if the doctors flat out refuse to log into it.
Wow. Okay, so we have the modernized servers, we have the measurable KPIs, and we have the staff actually on board. Now we actually have to build the thing. The source goes into prioritizing the roadmap and selecting the right tech, but the piece that really jumped out to me is security.
Oh, absolutely. IPA compliance.
Yes, because we aren't just talking about a retail app tracking, you know, what shoes you looked at online. This is highly sensitive, legally protected medical data.
Which means security cannot be an afterthought. You can't just build a beautiful functional app and then try to patch in encryption right before you launch. Data privacy, strict access controls, and robust governance policies, they all have to be baked into the foundational architecture of the software from day one.
Okay, reality check time. I am looking at this massive checklist. Tear down legacy silos, build APIs, establish granular KPIs, run hospital-wide change management, and architect bulletproof legal security. How long does a hospital actually spend in this transition phase?
You really need to set realistic expectations here. For a small, localized project, like maybe digitizing a single department's intake forms, you might be looking at 3 to 6 months.
Okay, that's not too bad.
But for a true enterprise-wide digital shift, it is a marathon. The timeline is typically 1 to 3 years, and sometimes even longer.
Wow. And here's where it gets really interesting, because 3 years is a long time to wait for a return on investment. I want to shift away from the theory and look at what happens when an organization actually survives that multi-year journey. The text highlights a few concrete case studies that prove this tech in action.
It's vital to see the practical application. What stood out to you?
Johns Hopkins Medicine. During the COVID-19 pandemic, they expanded their telemedicine capabilities to conduct over 1.5 million virtual visits.
An unbelievable scale.
Right. Think about the logistical nightmare of setting up the bandwidth, the scheduling, and the privacy protocols to handle 1.5 million video calls securely. They essentially turned remote care into a routine, completely borderless practice.
And you know, the truly impressive part of that case study isn't just that they scaled up for a temporary emergency. It is that they recognized the permanent value of that infrastructure and they integrated it into their core delivery model. They permanently improved access to care for people with mobility issues or, you know, those living in really rural areas.
Yeah, that's huge. Then the guide mentions two other companies, Medifany and OrthoSelect. Medifany uses AI speech to text specifically to automate radiology reports. So instead of a radiologist dictating a report, waiting days for it to be transcribed, and then reviewing it manually, which just drains hours of their day, the AI handles the documentation in real time.
That's a massive time saver.
Exactly. And OrthoSelect is using AI for accurate tooth segmentation and orthodontics to speed up treatment planning.
Those are excellent examples of highly targeted AI solving very specific workflow bottlenecks. But the case study that really serves as a true masterclass in how to build for the long term is MedCAD.
Right. This is the company that built the AI to analyze 3D bone structures.
Yes. They built an AI platform to automatically segment 3D bone structures from CT scans. But the AI model itself is really just the tip of the iceberg here. The real innovation was their partnership with Scotic to build an end-to-end MLOps framework.
Okay, hold on. You're going to have to translate that one for me. What on earth is an MLOps framework?
I know, more acronyms. MLOps stands for Machine Learning Operations. To understand why it's so critical, you have to understand that medical AI is not a set-it-and-forget-it tool. If you buy a new car and never change the oil, the engine degrades, right?
Right.
Well, AI models suffer from something similar. It's called model drift. As they encounter new, messy, real-world data over time, their accuracy can actually slowly degrade if they aren't constantly maintained and retrained.
Oh, wow. So MLOps is like the automated maintenance shop for the AI.
That's exactly it. Think of it as a highly rigorous factory quality assurance line. It automates the entire process of feeding the AI new data, testing its accuracy, and then seamlessly updating the model. For MedCAD, this automated retraining workflow accelerated their model iteration cycles by 50 to 60%.
That's incredible.
It is. But the most vital feature of MLOps for the healthcare sector specifically is traceability.
Traceability, right. Because an AI can't just spit out a medical recommendation and say, trust me, I'm a computer. Yeah. A doctor has to know exactly why it made that specific decision.
Exactly. And so do the regulatory bodies. If an auditor comes in and asks why the AI segmented a patient's CT scan a certain way, the hospital cannot just shrug its shoulders.
We don't know. The black box did it.
Right. That doesn't hold up in court. The MLOps framework provides a complete, mathematically provable audit trail. It records the exact history of the data, the specific version of the model that was used on that particular day, and all the parameters involved. It separates a fun science experiment from a traceable, legally compliant medical tool.
That makes a ton of sense. So we see these massive gains with MedCAD and Johns Hopkins. We know the blueprint, and we clearly see the results. If the path is this well documented, I just have to ask again, why is it still such a minefield? What are the specific roadblocks keeping that 75% failure rate so stubbornly high?
The guide points to three really stubborn hurdles. The first, unsurprisingly, is budget constraints.
Always comes down to money.
It always does. This level of architectural rewiring requires massive upfront investment. You cannot walk into a board meeting and ask for tens of millions of dollars for the vague concept of transformation. This is exactly why successful organizations use phased rollouts. They target a high-impact, high-ROI project first, they prove its financial value, and then they use that success to justify funding the next phase.
Okay, so you prove the concept small before you go big. What's the second hurdle?
Regulatory compliance. Navigating HIPAA while moving massive amounts of sensitive data to the cloud adds layers of legal complexity that just naturally slow down development. But the third roadblock is arguably the most frustrating of all, integration complexity.
Ah, which circles back to those legacy data silos we talked about earlier. I was trying to visualize this while reading the source material. Imagine a hospital is a living room.
Okay, a living room.
Yeah, and they have an accounting system from 2012, which is like an Xbox 360. And they just bought a state-of-the-art MRI machine, which is like a brand new PlayStation 5. They want both systems to run the exact same video game disc. It just won't work. The hardware is different. The code is different. They do not natively speak to each other.
That captures the friction perfectly. The patient data exists, but it is locked inside proprietary vendor formats. So to get the Xbox and the PlayStation to share data seamlessly, you need a universal translator. And the text specifically highlights two critical interoperability standards used to solve this. HL7 and FHIR.
FHIR, as in building a campfire.
It's spelled FHIR. It stands for Fast Healthcare Interoperability Resources.
Okay, so how does FHIR actually translate the data between the different systems?
It standardizes the way healthcare data is packaged. So, for example, the Xbox might format a patient's date of birth as month, day, year, while the PlayStation requires year, month, day. If they try to share a file natively, the system just crashes. FHIR establishes a strict, modern, web-based standard for exactly how every single piece of medical information, from allergies to lab results, must be formatted when traveling between systems. It forces everyone to speak the exact same grammatical language.
So FHIR is basically the rulebook that allows those APIs we talked about earlier, the waiters, to actually carry the data back and forth without dropping it on the floor.
Precisely. But here is the final catch. Even with the FHIR rulebook in hand, implementing this across a massive, tangled web of legacy hospital servers is incredibly difficult, highly specialized work.
Right. I would imagine the hospital's internal IT department doesn't have the time to build an MLOps framework from scratch. I mean, they're probably too busy fixing jammed printers and resetting doctors' passwords.
Which is exactly why the source emphasizes partnering with experienced software development firms like Scopic, who actually authored the guide. You need specialized architects who know how to implement these APIs and build compliant cloud infrastructure without taking the hospital's daily life-saving operations offline. Bringing in external experts mitigates the exact technical risks that delay projects and drive up that 75% failure rate we've been talking about.
So what does this all mean for you, the person listening to this right now? If we zoom out from the APIs, the FHIR standards, and the MELs, the core takeaway is this. Digital transformation in medicine is not a software update. It is a total cultural and operational rewiring of the healthcare system. It takes years of grueling work, it requires hyper-specific goals, and it demands immense empathy for the doctors and nurses who actually have to use the technology.
It truly changes the fundamental foundation of how care is administered.
Exactly. And whether you are stepping into a local clinic for a routine checkup, or you were just syncing a new smartwatch to your phone, this invisible digital infrastructure is what will dictate the speed, the accuracy, and the quality of the care you receive.
It's running quietly in the background of all our lives. And I think it raises a really profound question about where the future of medicine is actually heading.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, the source discusses the growing integration of the Internet of Medical Things, or IOMT. We are talking about wearable devices that provide continuous, real-time data collection and remote patient monitoring.
Like a smartwatch constantly checking for irregular heartbeats, or a connected blood pressure monitor you just use at your kitchen table.
Yes. So I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder on your own. If our medical systems are eventually capable of passively monitoring our vital signs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And if they can use predictive AI to spot health issues before we ever feel a single physical symptom, does the very definition of going to the doctor fundamentally change?
Ooh, wow.
Does it cease to be a distinct event that we actively schedule when we feel sick and instead become this invisible, continuous background process that we just live alongside?